It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Today, the U.S. Senate is expected to vote on how to address the soon-to-expire Affordable Care Act tax credits used by millions of Americans. The expanded subsidies were at the center of the longest-ever federal government shutdown.
There are two plans on the table, one drafted by each party. The Democratic plan would extend those ACA tax credits for 3 years. The Republican-authored bill would provide between $1,000 and $1,500 per year deposited into a health savings account. It would be limited to adults using lower levels of marketplace coverage.
Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin joins us now for a look at those proposals and what's at stake. Senator Baldwin, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thanks for having me.
You, your fellow Democrats, looking to extend these expanded subsidies for 3 years. Make the case for us, please.
Absolutely. We are 4 days away from the end of the open enrollment period, the shopping period for healthcare.gov, where people can buy their health insurance for next year. And people going to that website who had coverage this year are seeing double, triple, quadruple the premiums that they experienced last year. I've been holding roundtables across the state of Wisconsin, listening to people who are being impacted. Nancy, a cancer survivor and small business owner in Milwaukee, will see her insurance jump from $370 a month to $1,150 a month. And Dawn in Stevens Point, a retired teacher, shared with me that her family's monthly premium will jump from $500 a month to $2,475 per month if these tax breaks are not extended. So we are in a time of great urgency, and really the only workable solution right now is to extend these tax breaks so that working families can afford their premiums. There is plenty of time in the future to deal with the significant problems with our healthcare system, but an HSA, health savings account, with $1,000 deposited into it will do little to help people like Nancy and Dawn and the tens of thousands of other Wisconsinites who are seeing this cliff right in front of them, where they, some of them, will just have to forego insurance because they cannot fit these premiums into their budgets.
Your Republican colleagues have said, among other things, hey, these were COVID-era emergency expanded subsidies. The COVID emergency is over. It's time to end these expanded subsidies. What do you say to that argument?
Well, what we saw when we passed these tax credits for lower and middle income people is that the healthcare market, individual and small business market, really stabilized. A lot of insurance companies that had not previously participated in the Affordable Care Act marketplaces got into those marketplaces. There was competition. We saw actually premiums go down at that moment in time. And we saw record levels of insurance in this country. These should be our goals as a country, the wealthiest country on earth. We should want to see as many people access healthcare coverage as possible. And remember, this particular program, the Affordable Care Act marketplace, is really the individual insurance market. It is where farmers get their insurance, where small business owners, entrepreneurs go for their health insurance. And it really has an oversized economic impact because it is now a much more functional market. But that will end in a few days when these tax credits disappear. And so I believe that these tax credits really created new opportunities for working Americans. And I just want to say, prior to the Affordable Care Act, insurance companies in the individual market could just say no to somebody who had a pre-existing condition like Nancy, who's a cancer survivor. They could say you have limits, annual or lifetime limits, on how much we will assist with your care for chronic and acute conditions. The Affordable Care Act changed all of that. And my Republican colleagues really have never had an alternative plan. They always said repeal and replace, and they tried to repeal. Let me share, dozens of times. But the only plan they've ever had has been to repeal the Affordable Care Act. We've never seen a realistic plan put forward on the part of Donald Trump or my Republican colleagues.
We're talking to U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin about anticipated votes in the Senate today on the Affordable Care Act tax credits, expanded subsidies that expire next year. Senator Baldwin, neither of these bills, yours or Republican bills, are expected to pass in the Senate today. So what then? Do you see any signs of possible negotiations to try to come to some kind of agreement by January 1st?
Well, certainly I'm not going to throw in the towel. I will never stop fighting for affordable health care for the people who sent me to Washington to fight for them. However, I suspect we will get a few Republicans who vote to extend the tax credits. I certainly hope that will be the case. And I hope that we will continue to be in dialogue. But frankly, if these tax credits expire, the Republicans and Donald Trump own that. They own the crisis that they have created. It is self-inflicted. And we'll work throughout the weeks to come to address this crisis. But frankly, if they don't show a willingness to sit down and negotiate, they will own this crisis going into the midterms next year.
Here's some breaking news from yesterday. A group of moderate Republicans in the House, or ones who felt they're in vulnerable districts, said, "We want to have a discharge petition to force a vote on a plan that would extend the tax credits for 2 years instead of three, as you're looking for, and impose some new eligibility requirements, especially for higher income people receiving those tax credits, and some new fraud controls." Could you see that idea? The details, obviously, still waiting there. Could you see that as a basis for a compromise?
Yes. But let me just say that we have put that on the table and Republicans refuse to come to the table. We have been talking. I personally have been talking across the party aisle since this summer and understand that there are Republicans in the Senate who would welcome the opportunity to extend the tax credits with a few modifications that would be acceptable to both parties. The problem is that the vast majority of Republicans have as their sole goal to end the Affordable Care Act, to repeal it in its entirety, to make it fail. And therefore, it's promising as it sounds when we have some Republicans express interest in that. We need 60 votes in the Senate. And right now, I do not see an extension of the tax credits with modifications getting the requisite number of Republican votes. I'd certainly love to be proven wrong. This is an urgent crisis facing the people I represent.
Now, your Republican colleague in Wisconsin in the Senate, Senator Ron Johnson, has been making the case in the last couple of weeks, paraphrasing here, hey, if the Affordable Care Act needs this extra spending, needs these extra tax credits just to hang on, well, that's a sign of failure of the Affordable Care Act, that it's gotten it wrong and we need to scrap it. What do you say to his argument?
What I would say to Senator Johnson is the entire healthcare system is significant trouble, and we need to see reforms across the board. This is not an isolated issue that affects only the individual and small business market. This is something that we are seeing throughout the healthcare system. Remind listeners that in America, we spend twice as much as any industrialized country in the world with worse outcomes. We pay much more for pharmaceutical products in America than they do in other nations, and we need to put an end to that. There are middlemen in every aspect of healthcare drawing off dollars for profit, not for focus on patient health and well-being. There are a tremendous number of reforms that need to be imposed by the Congress of the United States. But to focus only on the Affordable Care Act, which is insurance plans for those who are self-employed, in school, in small businesses, entrepreneurs, farmers, to focus only on that would be short-sighted and clearly a misunderstanding of the problems with the healthcare system writ large.
In our last few moments, the shutdown earlier this year, these subsidies were at the center of it. Do you regret, given where we are now, going into that shutdown in the first place, or the fact that we came out of that shutdown without a guaranteed vote?
I voted against proceeding to the continuing resolution for the very reason that I didn't think a wink and a nod to a future vote was sufficient. I wanted to get the job done. I wanted to make sure that we had a commitment to pass an extension of these tax credits, not just a commitment to have a future vote. So here we are. This is the path that was taken. And what I really want to see is my Republican colleagues, especially those who have at this late date expressed a willingness to compromise, to get serious about that and extend these tax credits and then move on to the larger reforms that I just referred to that are absolutely necessary to make our U.S. healthcare system work.
Senator Baldwin, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That's Tammy Baldwin, Democratic senator from Wisconsin. We've been talking about Affordable Care Act subsidies. We've got lines out to the state's Republican delegation as well. If you have been searching for, filing for coverage under the Affordable Care Act, or you're doing that in the next few days, what are you seeing when it comes to the prices and how they change from year to year? Tell us about it. Email wisconsintoday@wpr.org. That's wisconsintoday@wpr.org.
Coming up, check out the costs of Christmas in the midst of tariffs and inflation. We'll visit a tree farm here in the state and a store that sells imported decorations and artificial trees.
Ever since we heard about the issue of the tariffs, we have been working diligently to keep Christmas decorating affordable for our customers.
That's next on WPR News.
When setting up the Christmas tree, do you grab an artificial one from the basement or a store, or do you head down to the local tree farm to pick up this year's evergreen?
The number of households that buy real Christmas trees has been declining. An ABC News poll last year found nearly 60% of Americans buy artificial trees over real ones.
Wisconsin used to manufacture Christmas trees back in the day. That all largely happens in China now, where imports currently face tariffs of as much as 30%. So what does that mean for stores selling those decorations?
We're looking at the latest economic news as seen through the Christmas tree business here in Wisconsin.
Chris Reisdorf is co-president of Milliger's, a home and garden store in Racine and Sturtevant. Chris, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Well, I'm happy to talk with you.
Now, we've heard a lot about tariffs, of course, on products from China in particular. I understand a lot of artificial Christmas trees might come from China. The numbers bounced around maybe as high as 30%. So what are you seeing with the goods coming through your store as far as what the tariffs are doing with their prices?
Ever since we heard about the issue of the tariffs, we have been working diligently to keep Christmas decorating affordable for our customers. We have been negotiating with our tree makers, asking for additional discounts, and doing absolutely everything we can to reduce the impact of the tariff. So the upshot really is that we are not very much affected by the tariffs. Many trees might be $10 or $15, $20 more than they were last year, which is really insignificant in the terms of, you know, the cost of the tree.
So the breakdown there, you're saying the suppliers might be lowering the price. Are you getting your profit cut into a little to help keep the price increases down like that?
Well, yes, we are also doing our fair share of making Christmas affordable. So what we're doing is we're absorbing some of the cost, and our vendors are absorbing some as well. And whatever is left of the tariff, we are not using that as additional profit, or we are just passing that ultimate cost along. But it's a reduced cost. So it's very insignificant compared to when the average person is thinking 30% is a tariff. That's not by any means what they're really paying.
Gotcha. Now, Wisconsin has a long history with making artificial trees back in the day. People might wonder, well, could we source artificial trees here in the U.S.? What does it look like as you shop around for the supplies that you're going to sell people in your store?
Well, it's been a long time since anyone has been producing trees in the United States. And I would say that is not something that's in the foreseeable future. I think that there will be other countries such as Cambodia that will be venturing into Christmas manufacturing, but not here in the States.
As of right now, is China kind of the only game in town if I want to import artificial trees?
Pretty much so, yes.
Interesting. Now, how about all the other, I mean, there's the trees, and of course, there's all the trimmings, a lot of decorations and things like that. What's the case for that? Is a lot of that imported as well?
Yes. You know, none of the ornaments really are made in the United States anymore. And so that's all imported from China or some of the neighboring countries.
Now, stepping away from tariffs, when it comes to artificial versus grown trees, demand has gone up and down. Preferences have gone up and down. What have you seen in recent years when it comes to interest in artificial Christmas trees?
Well, I think it's continuing to grow. I think we have many exclusives that we design ourselves, and we are always trying to make a better tree, a tree that is stronger, that holds more ornaments, that looks more natural. In fact, we don't even use the word artificial. We always say almost real, because that's how our trees look. And because of the flexibility with lights that last forever, many people have added additional trees to their home decorating. So instead of spending time putting lights on a tree or dealing with lights that don't work, they have extra time to decorate. And so we're finding that they add a tree in their kitchen, or they'll have another one in a child's bedroom or in an entryway. There are so many opportunities to add another place for all the wonderful ornaments that we offer.
You are a home and garden store, so you don't close the day after Christmas. You're open all year long. How big a part of your business, though, is the Christmas season?
Well, we have always balanced our growing our plants, and that, you know, we are basically growers and plant people. But we, on the flip side, we have always done Christmas since even before we had a Milliger's store. So for us, Christmas is very important, and it sustains all of our workers so that they are all working on a year-round basis. And the neighboring states, all of our customers come from all over because of the selection of the vast amount of Christmas that we offer.
Chris, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you.
That was Chris Reisdorf, co-president of Milliger's, a home and garden store based in Racine and Sturtevant. Now we turn from the stores selling artificial trees to take a look at the Wisconsin farmers growing evergreen Christmas trees and how they're being affected by the tariffs and the current economy. Greg Han owns Han's Christmas Farm in Oregon and sits on the board of the Wisconsin Christmas Tree Producers Association. Greg, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me on.
First of all, how is business going for Christmas trees, for real Christmas trees in Wisconsin this year, your business and your colleagues?
Real tree sales seem to be up this year across the board. We're very fortunate this year because over the last 2 years, supply has increased since COVID. During COVID, everybody wanted a live tree. Everybody was coming back to that tradition of putting a live tree in their house. They wanted an outside activity, and it really did deplete some of the supply because we sold so many those years of COVID. And it's nice to have a little bit of a increase in production now over the last 5 years since then. And also because of that, it was nice to have tree prices have actually held. We've interviewed wholesale suppliers in the United States, and 84% of them said that they have held their prices the same in the last 2 years. So it's kind of nice to have a good supply with a stable price in this economy.
Now, I'm imagining there's probably not a huge direct impact of tariffs in my head. The Christmas trees we see at those stands were grown in the U.S. for the most part.
Well, and that's wonderful. Canada and U.S. Do grow a majority. We ship outside of the country. Tariffs do not affect us. Tariffs, it's 100% grown in the United States. In fact, our industry is looking at the opposite. We're trying to keep those tariffs up. We're looking for a 300% tariff on artificial trees to bring them in so that we are more of an even playing field with the production costs that we have with fertilizing and labor and those kind of things in the United States, that we'd love to have all of that production stay right here in the States, along with the local economies that it supports. As I have 100 staff on our farm here in Oregon, Wisconsin, and all of that local economy that I'm supporting by paying those employees.
Do you hear much from customers who might have thought artificial tree in the past, but are worried about the effect of tariff costs? Is that something that you see on people's minds even at this point?
I think that they are starting to question it as our prices are in the Wisconsin area, a little under $100 for a real tree compared to going to some of the higher end artificial trees in the $300 to $500. So I think that they're starting to look at the spread as far as, I'll just look for a real tree. But a lot of our customers are really looking for the traditions. They're looking for that fragrance of a real tree. They're looking for, we have to start our holidays with this tradition of having the family come. We either come to a tree lot or a choose and cut farm like mine, where they want to start that tradition of the family together. They pick the tree, they take it into their house. They love the tradition of some parts of the family put the lights on, some of the parts of the family put the ornaments on. So I think that it's just such a deep tradition based that people like starting that as opposed to the fake trees.
And Greg, you mentioned your staff. A lot of businesses in Wisconsin have told me, hey, we're having trouble finding people. How is staffing looking like in the Christmas tree business?
For me, I'm very fortunate. I think it's, around the holidays, people need a little bit extra money. We are a 4 to 6 week job, a very quick and short job that they're not committed to. So for me around here in this area, I'm very fortunate that I have people that just want to pick it up. And, you make an extra $1,000 that pays for Christmas presents and goes a long ways. So I'm fortunate here to be able to find some of the part-time people.
And Greg, I just got to ask, with such a seasonal business like this, I don't know, do you get a lot of sleep, a lot of rest this time of year?
Yeah. It's a short season. But no, rest is for January 1st, once we're done. A lot of people ask me specifically, do you even enjoy Christmas? And I love Christmas because I'm treated like a king on that day. You know, I've been working for 2 months straight and my family brings me the plates and the cocktails and say, no, you just relax. You've been working hard. So I think I'm probably one of the bigger fans of Christmas because of that.
Greg, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
Greg Han owns Han's Christmas Farm in Oregon and sits on the board of the Wisconsin Christmas Tree Producers Association. We also talked to Chris Reisdorf, co-president of Milliger's, a home and garden store in Racine and Sturtevant, but talking about how tariffs are affecting prices and demand for artificial and real Christmas trees this year.
Coming up, cheese experts from around the world came together in Switzerland for the World Cheese Awards. Meet the Young Cheesemonger of the Year representing Uplands Cheese Company in Dutchville.
The more you learn about cheese and the more you can share those stories with people and you can see how excited they are about the product as well, the more you kind of get into it.
Wisconsin's artisan cheese industry, that's next.
Last month, cheesemongers from around the world gathered at the World Cheese Awards in Switzerland to compete for the title of Young Cheesemonger of the Year.
Six finalists were judged in tasks crucial to being a good cheesemonger, like identifying cheeses, cutting and weighing, cheese board design, and creating perfect flavor pairings.
And who came out on top? None other than Wisconsin's own 28-year-old Hannah Lee. She's the first American to ever take home that title.
Hannah is a seasonal cheesemaking assistant at Uplands Cheese Company in Dodgeville, and she joins us now to talk about her journey as a cheese professional with advice for our holiday gatherings. Hannah, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
You competed in Switzerland for this title, and at the competition, the judges were looking for, above all, a deep passion for cheese. Where does that passion come from for you?
So it comes from just a lot of time in the industry. I didn't really mean to end up in cheese. I studied animal science in college and ended up being kind of interested in like dairy animals. And then just through a couple different like work positions, ended up sticking it out in cheese for the last 7 years. And I feel like the longer I've been in the industry and the more that I've learned, the more that sort of interest and passion has grown.
Can you tell us about the traits that make a good cheesemonger and how you've developed those skills over time?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for cheesemongers is like curiosity and interest. I've always loved learning more things. And so the great thing about cheese is it's sort of this endless well of knowledge that you can sort of pick out from all these different places, books, media, other people in the industry. So that has really been what's like kept me in the industry for as long as I have been. And then another thing is just like that passion and interest in working with customers, because it is cheesemongering is such a customer focused facing job. And so you really have to be able to want to talk to people all day long, which is a skill that people, you know, I wasn't the greatest at it when I started, I'll admit. Like, I was kind of like, why should I talk to these people? But the more you learn about cheese and the more you can share those stories with people and you can see how excited they are about the product as well, the more you kind of get into it.
You always have to keep learning and keep listening to the people who are eating your cheese.
Mm-hmm.
To qualify as a finalist, you submitted an exceptional cheese board. What was on it?
So there was a cheese from an Italian producer called Casaficcio dell'Altolonga, and it was their Robbiolo Bocino, which is a mixed milk, cow and sheep milk, soft-ripened cheese. It's just really delicious, kind of yeasty and soft and gooey. And then there was a Wisconsin cheese from Marika Gouda up in Thorpe. It was the aged Gouda, so it's the 9 to 12-month profile, and I think that hits a good balance between the more aged caramelly notes and that sort of like young, pliable, creamy texture that it can have. Mm. And then there was a kind of unique Spanish cheese called Montealva, which is a goat's milk cheese that's aged about 4 months, kind of bright, lemony, made in Andalusia from a rare breed of goat called the Payoya goat.
Wow.
Just kind of a unique cheese you can't find very many places, but we used to carry it on a counter I worked at, and I loved it. And then a Gorgonzola Dolce from Italy that is a little softer, creamier, less salty than what you can find at most grocery stores.
I can't imagine when you were designing this board how much thought you had to go into what would be on the board and who, you know, what cheese would be on the cutting room floor, what right. cheese you couldn't have on the board. How hard was that?
Yeah, so it was, we weren't given a ton of direction. We had a budget we had to work within, 60 Great British Pounds, and then they wanted us to create a board for six people with up to six cheeses. So it was kind of broad, and then they said, if you want to create a theme, you can. So I was designing it in August. I have an August birthday, and I was like, this is a summer birthday cheese board. So all of the cheeses kind of play well with, like, a sparkling white wine or a light-bodied red, something that I would want to eat in the summer and enjoy with a nice sparkling wine on my birthday. So,
Hannah, you were also tested on identifying cheeses, including their make, class, milk type, and country of origin. How do you develop those skills?
That is definitely a tricky skill. That it's usually my worst performances in that category at competitions historically, because it is such a hard thing to develop your palate for. There are some cues you can take, like the color of the cheese, the texture, the aroma that you're getting off of it. But it really just comes with eating a lot of cheese, which, you know, what a hard part of the job, right? Eat cheese every day.
We're talking with Hannah Lee, the 2025 Young Cheesemonger of the Year, the first U.S. winner of that competition. She works at Uplands Cheese in Dodgeville. Hannah, can you apply your cheesemonger expertise to our lowly holiday cheese boards? What should we bear in mind when creating our own board?
So for the holidays, usually you have a large group, family members who maybe don't love weird, stinky, funky cheeses. So it's nice to have some of those for the cheese nerds, but keeping in mind, like, crowd pleasers. So I always think, like, a Gouda is something that's great, and the holidays, Gruyere is a really good option. It's more of, like, a rich, more savory cheese that doesn't get overshadowed by the other holiday foods that you have. Mm-hmm. And then I always like to have a little bit of something with some acid on my cheese boards, which can help brighten up the flavor of the cheese, and it also cuts through the fat if you have something that's a little richer. So that could be something like a pickle or like a tart fruit. Pomegranate, apple in the winter is great.
Anything you recommend to clear the palate or to have on the board as more of a neutral zone?
Yeah, well, to clear your palate, sparkling wine is always great. Those bubbles help.
There's that
again.
Sparkling wine again.
Those bubbles kind of clear off your tongue and let you taste more. But, you know, a nice neutral cracker is great, or like a really beautiful crusty bread from a local bakery is always fun to pick up. And, you know, nuts, salty, little crunchy things. If you want to a break from the creaminess of the cheese.
I can just see this board now. It is so beautiful. Are there any, like, rookie cheese board mistakes that we should try to avoid?
You know, if it's your first cheese board, you just kind of do whatever you want. There's no rules when it comes to cheese. If you're really concerned about picking cheeses that people will like, a great thing to do is go to like a cut-to-order cheese shop in your area. So in Madison, there's Fromagination, and there's educated people who work there, cheesemongers like myself, who have been tasting this cheese and can help you pick out things. So you can go in and say, I've never made a cheese board before. Do you have three that you would recommend? And they're definitely going to have something that they can help you pick out.
What about cheese on a budget?
Cheese on a budget? Yeah, there's, you know, domestic cheese is a really great option. There are some really great Wisconsin cheesemakers like Carr Valley Cheese, who make delicious cheddars, but that come in a little bit cheaper. Mm-hmm. Or you can go to a store like a Trader Joe's. You know, their cheese is definitely a little cheaper. It might be a slightly lower quality, but if you're just looking to try out some new things. That can be a way to taste something like maybe you've never had a Manchego before. You can go try it at Trader Joe's. And if you like it, then you can go to somewhere like Whole Foods and try something that's a little bit higher end.
Okay. What makes Wisconsin special as a cheese-making destination?
So Wisconsin is pretty unique. They've been making cheese for longer than we've been a state here, which is pretty fascinating. Yeah. And what originally drew cheesemakers here from like Switzerland when they came over as immigrants was the quality of the land. So there's really great soil here in Wisconsin, which means great feed and happy cows who eat that feed and really high quality milk. So, yeah, Wisconsin's definitely really great about making sure that the ingredient quality that's going into that cheese is really, really high.
Before I let you go, what could this Young Cheesemonger of the Year title mean for your career?
Yeah, who knows? I'm kind of open to anything that comes my way. I'm looking forward to putting together some classes for the public, expand knowledge of artisan cheese for the general layperson, because especially right now, like, prices of everything are going up. So it's, you know, kind of like, why would I spend my money on cheese that's more expensive? But it really is very helpful for farmers who are putting in all this passion and labor behind their super high quality product. And it's really great for people to be engaged with that and realize why we should be supporting those types of cheesemakers.
Hannah, congratulations, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That is Hannah Lee, 2025 Young Cheesemonger of the Year, the first U.S. winner of that worldwide competition. She is a seasonal cheesemaking assistant at Upland's Cheese Company in Dodgeville.
Wisconsin Today producers include Mackenzie Crummy, Royce Podeswa, and Beatrice Lawrence.
Our technical directors are Tyler Ditter and Sarah Hopeful.
Learn more about us at WPR.org/Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer Kent. Thanks for listening to WPR News.